Oliver Hartwich was until recently chief economist at Policy Exchange, a London think tank, and he's just moved to Australia to become a research fellow at the Free Market Centre for Independent Studies. Oliver, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much for having me.
I should start by asking you why you came to Australia, but I'd like to divide the question into two parts, maybe. First of all, what was wrong with London? Because I know you have expressed some views about London on your departure in public. And secondly, what attracted you to Australia?
Okay, to start with the first question first, what was wrong with London? London is a wonderful place to live, a wonderful place to work. The only problem with it is it's very expensive. Whatever you do in London, whether you go on public transport or whether you go shopping at IKEA, it doesn't really matter. Everything is about 30, 40% more expensive than it would be in other places around the world like Berlin or Sydney. So that was really driving us away.
Why is that, do you know? Is there an easy answer?
There's not a real easy answer, but there are a number of factors contributing to that. For once, British land supply policies have been very tight for decades, so land prices are extremely high. And therefore, whatever you do, whether you buy a house or whether you rent a flat or whether you go shopping, you always use land in some way or another. So it's always passed on to the consumer and they have to foot the bill in the end.
Mm. Okay. So you decided to get out. Why Australia? I know, by the way, you have studied here before at the University of Sydney, haven't you?
Yes, I have. I did my PhD thesis on Australian trade practices law. But to be quite honest with you, it was a different reason because my wife's Australian. Yeah. And as much as the Australian Trade Practices Act really attracted me, it was probably my wife as well.
All right, so you're back. Well, that's good. Anyway, it's good to have you here.
You're back at a fascinating time in terms of ideas about world finance and economics. What are you looking forward to tackling in Australia?
Well, I think one of the pressing problems in Australia today is the housing market, because it is still very difficult to get a foot on a housing ladder for first-timers. It's very difficult to find a place to rent, especially in the capital cities, where many people feel squeezed out of the market. And housing affordability is one of the issues I was working on in Britain, and I would very much like to do the same thing here.
Are there similar problems as far as you can work out?
Well, yes, actually, a few years ago, I did a comparative study of housing policies in five different countries in the UK. We had to look at Ireland as well, Australia, Germany and Switzerland. And in comparing them, you could find some parallels between the UK housing market and the Australian housing market. I was actually quite surprised when I arrived here to do my housing research. The first thing Australian planners told me that they were running out of land. And I thought, you must be joking. You can't be running out of land in a continent-sized country. And so I think far from really running out of land, this country certainly just needs different housing supply policies and land supply policies. So I think there are some parallels. And in particular, I would like to look at the incentives for planners to actually produce pro-development policies.
We might talk a bit more about that later on if we've got time. But first, I'd just like to talk about liberal economic ideas more generally. Now, you've come from one free market think tank to another, and liberal economic ideas have had a fairly big influence around the world in recent decades. Do you think the way those liberal ideas were adopted may have contributed in some way to the current economic crisis?
Well, I think it would be quite foolish to deny that there were some market failures occurring in the current financial crisis. On the other hand, I think that doesn't really help us with an explanation of what's going on. We should also have a look at state failures, government failures, and I think there are quite a number of them. If you look, for example, at the American housing market, it was the government driving people into home ownership when they couldn't afford it. It was the government encouraging that kind of behavior. It was also, let's not forget, a central bank, so basically a state-owned entity, pushing forward interest rates of down to just 1%. So I think all this contributed to the financial crisis. So it wasn't purely a market phenomenon. And many of the policies that really got us into this mess have been propagated by politicians.
But last week, Alan Greenspan admitted that regulation, in his view, should have played a bigger part in the economy than he'd previously thought. In effect, he was suggesting that the deregulation or the urge to get government out of things may have gone a bit too far. Do you think that's something that free market think tanks might brood upon as well?
Well, we could look at the kind of regulation. For example, you could ask yourself, why was it so easy for people to walk away from mortgages in the US markets when actually they were still paying their credit card bills? So I think there was a regulatory fault to make it too easy for them to get away from a house that they could no longer afford. You could also look at land supply policies in America, by the way, because then you will see that in those parts of America that were most strictly regulated, house prices skyrocketed and the percentage of subprime mortgages went up immediately. So I think there were a number of factors really at play in the American markets contributing to the current crisis.
So what you were suggesting is that government regulation or over-regulation of the housing market increased prices to the point where you needed those somewhat strange policies to enable poorer people to buy houses.
Absolutely. And the irony is, of course, that the government in the UK as well as in Australia are still trying to push people into home ownership at a time when the markets are falling. So you're really trying to get people into a market where they might be falling over the cliff next year. I think that's quite irresponsible behaviour on part of the governments.
Let's talk banks. You've been in Australia for 2 weeks and we've got our way of government involvement in banking. It looks as almost every country in the world has got some way of government involving in banking. What's your view on all of that?
Well, as you would have picked up from my accent, I'm German, so I'm also following the German markets and the German bank regulations. What I find fascinating is that, especially in Germany, we've got politicians now saying that the Anglo-American way of dealing with banking is over and that the German politicians want to take control over the banks. But funnily, in Germany, the only banks really in deep trouble are the banks controlled by politicians, the half state-owned banks. So I think, well, if the politicians actually couldn't get their banks to act properly and prudently, I mean, why would you trust these guys with regulating the rest of the banking sector?
We're hearing this a lot from President Sarkozy as well, that there is going to be a European or a French way of regulating banking that's going to be different from what happened over there. Has anyone got it right at the moment, do you think?
I think the Europeans are still trying to figure out how to do things and who takes the copyright for the new banking regulations. I think there's quite a bit of a dispute at the moment between Sarkozy and Gordon Brown, and I think Angela Merkel also wants to play her role in this. I think the Europeans haven't quite got the model yet. They had a summit 2 weeks ago where they tried to get together a package where basically every government could take out all the parts that it likes to re-regulate its banking industry. But as far as I can see, there is no united European response to the banking crisis at the moment.
But in Australia, we have a federal government guaranteeing bank deposits. Good idea in the short term?
Well, probably the Australian government at the time didn't really have a choice because they were pushed by events around the globe and they were really pushed into giving that kind of guarantee. Whether they went too far in giving that unlimited guarantee is a different matter.
But do you think in general that it is a good thing that we've seen governments around the world jump into the banking industry to the extent that they have?
Well, in the short term, I think they had little choice. In the long run, they would probably have to think about it again.
Does that provide any sort of... I mean, for our listeners who are out there who've heard people come on this program, for example, for 4 years advocating a smaller role for government in the economy and less regulation, how do you think they might be reacting to you know, the support for what's happening now from someone like you, someone coming from that liberal point of view?
Well, I think the case for free markets is still out there, and there is a much wider case to be made for liberalism, for economic liberalism, and I think liberalism as such is a much wider concept than just purely looking at economic liberalism. We shouldn't forget that. And liberalism never guarantees that there will be no ups and downs in the markets. Yes, that's how markets behave. And markets can go up most of the time. They do. They will also correct at times. But I think this doesn't in no way diminish the case for free markets, because wherever free markets have been tried in history, they have succeeded, basically.
But there is a role for government, and on the whole, we're seeing that role fulfilled at the moment.
Well, there is a role for government, but I think, as I said, there was also a lot of government failure in the process building up to the crisis. So we shouldn't forget that. I think just because markets appear to be failing doesn't really give the government a blank check to intervene.
I was taken by a comment by the outgoing chairman of the Mortgage Bankers Association of Australia. And he said, and I quote, "Everyone believed that house prices would just keep rising." Perhaps it wasn't the market that failed so much. It was just naive optimism out there.
Well, if you have rising house prices over a prolonged period of time, then yes, you build up that kind of expectation that house prices will continue rising. In fact, where I've just come from the UK, we've had rising house prices of about 10% every year for 15 years. So people got used to that. And they built up the expectation that the best way to invest for their future and for their pension is probably just to buy a property, even if it's a 110% mortgage, because it will beat any kind of investment. It will beat putting money into the bank. That's the kind of expectation that was built up, but it was only built up because land supply policies were completely inadequate, and therefore the house price increases were built into the system. But that was, again, a regulatory failure.
Let's talk a bit more about house prices. In comparison with household incomes, Australian housing is some of the most expensive in the developed world. But how do we compare with Britain?
Well, that's really a matter of how you look at things. If you just compare purely on a, say, 3-4-bedroom basis, then you would probably find that, indeed, Australian house prices are quite expensive. On the other hand, I can tell you that from my own experience, I know that a 3- or 4-bedroom house is something very different in Australia than it is in the UK. I think a 3-4-bedroom house here is probably on average about 50-60% larger than a 3-4-bedroom house in the UK. So I think, yes, they may be too expensive and there's still room for a correction. On the other hand, I think they are not the most expensive in the world.
Mm. And what's the situation like in Germany?
Well, Germany is an interesting case because if you look at German house price figures, you can see that German house prices in real terms have been stable for about 4 decades. You can still buy a house in Germany, and by the way, in Switzerland as well, for the same price that you would have paid in 1970 if you take away the normal level of inflation.
Wow.
I think we should move there.
Why is that?
Well, simply because German and Swiss planners provided more housing. There were all the incentives in place to provide more housing because basically a planner is responsible for his council's budget. And these extra inhabitants are taxpayers and they pay straight into the council's budget. So as a councillor or as a planner, you have a very direct incentive to build more because these are the people that actually pay for your salary.
And is home ownership, you know, relatively the same in Germany as it is in Australia? And
no, it is a bit lower, but there's a reason for that, because if you don't have any reasons to expect future house price increases, you will feel less pressure to get onto the housing ladder.
Mm, that's true. So what was different? What made Australia and England different from what you've just described in Germany?
Well, as I said, there were different incentive structures in place for planners. If you're a planner in Switzerland, all your interest is in getting as many people into the area as possible because they are your taxpayers, they contribute to your budgets, to your local budgets, and then you can use the money to provide better public services or you can use the money to actually deliver tax cuts for local income tax, for example, in Switzerland. So the incentives are quite clear. You try to get as many people into your area as possible. In England, it's quite the opposite. In England, you have to pay for infrastructure. You have to deal with the NIMBYs, or actually, sorry, with the not in my backyards, or with the bananas, no, which stands for build absolutely nothing anywhere near anyone. Yep. And therefore, you don't have any proper incentive to build. And you always have to be instructed by your national government to do so. And that is the difference. And if you do that over a prolonged period of time, say 30, 40 years, you build up a big housing crisis.
Yeah. So is there a stronger system of local government in Germany?
There is a much stronger system historically in Germany, but there's an even stronger system than in Germany in Switzerland. In Switzerland, you have extremely independent local communities, local councils with own tax powers, and that really works because it gives a lot of control to local people. And it also provides the right kind of incentives.
Australians know all about housing. They've been thinking about housing for decades. But one problem we have here, and as an economist, I'd like your assessment of this. Everyone now is a shareholder, either through their super fund or you know, their retirement fund and so on. Super funds are being drawn into this area until it was banned of super funds, loaning money for short selling. By hedge funds. And a lot of Australians here in the financial press and the general press are saying, hang on, I didn't want my superannuation, my savings involved in anything like this. One of the guests on this show said, well, look, it's basically a division of labour. You give money to people and they do what's right. But there's been a drop of confidence here. Hedge funds, short selling, good idea? Not a good idea.
Probably a good idea still. And I think all the talk about banning short selling was really missing the point because I think you were just shooting the messenger. Short selling only occurred or could occur really because people had a reason to believe that there were some corrections going on in the markets. And I think you were not really addressing the real issue here, why people were believing that shares were going to fall in the future. So I think banning that short selling was the wrong step.
Okay. Look, we're almost out of time, but thank you very much, Oliver Hartwich, for joining us. I think we described you in the introduction as an Englishman. I'm very sorry about that. You are, of course, German.
Thank you.
And you are also the newly appointed research fellow at the Center for Independent Studies.